This is going to be a big year for us.
I promise to fight for the living.
Man har rustat sig för ett litet krig där ute i skogen.
What is the budget for our show?
Smaller than it was.
Yeah, not big enough.
Hi and very much welcome to Streaming Podden episode 50. Streaming Podden is a podcast centered around video streaming technology and open source. And it's with me, Jonas Birmi, and Magnus Svensson from Ivin Technology. How are you today, Magnus?
I'm good.
So where are you?
I'm in Helsingborg, south of Sweden, waiting for the premier game of the best soccer team.
Is there any snow outside, or do they play on grass?
They play on grass. It's a rare thing in Sweden now at the moment to have real grass instead of these plastic thingies that some teams are playing on.
Well, the last week when we looked outside the windows, we would expect, I think, playing on snow, even though in the southern part.
Yeah, this is now. I have 10 degrees and sun, so.
It's almost time for NAB in Las Vegas. It's counting down to that. What's your thoughts and expectation, Magnus?
Yeah, I'm looking forward. It agenda starts to fill up, and I think there will be a lot of people attending. Probably a bit more than last year, but probably not as it was before the pandemic. But I think that's good because it's less or more focused people there, which means that it's a lot of good discussions hovering around the West Hall probably most of the time. And on the strip on the evenings. So it looks good. The agenda is filling up.
And in today's episode, we have our guest from Fraunhofer Focus, Daniel Salhavi. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thank you, Jonas. Thank you, Magnus. Really great to be here. Really enjoyed your previous episode. So great to see that you're doing it in English now. I don't speak Swedish, although I have been to Sweden quite some time.
Okay. But
great to be here.
Nice to have you here, Daniel. So, for our audience, tell them a little bit about yourself. Who is Daniel and what have you been doing?
Mm-hmm. So I was born in Berlin and I've also been working in Berlin more or less my whole life. I'm located pretty much in the center of Berlin, working for Fraunhofer Focus. And I have been in the media streaming industry for quite some time now. So I received my master in computer science in 2015. I started working as a student assistant already in Fraunhofer Focus before finishing my master in 2013. And as I said, so doing media streaming for like at least 10 years now. Actually, I started off also as part of a student assistant job with dealing ad insertion in Dash. This is also where I took my first steps with Dash.js, potential topic for today. And after that, dealing with various projects around media streaming. And since 2019, I'm the lead developer of the Dash.js project. And I also coordinating the 5G Mac reference tools. So also an interesting project, open source project around 5G media streaming, 5G broadcast, doing that since 2021. And aside from that, also doing some standardization work in CTA Wave, in Dash.if, and giving lectures at the Technical University in Berlin. Also supervising student master thesis, bachelor thesis.
Yeah, we'll probably have time to talk about both Dash.js and 5G Mac later on in the show. For our audience who might not know, Fraunhofer Focus, what is that?
Mm-hmm. So Fraunhofer Focus is actually one of 75 institutes all over Germany. So maybe people have heard about Fraunhofer before, but it's really like spread all over Germany, and the institutes are dealing with various different topics. So it's not only media streaming, but really also a front of institutes dealing with totally different things than we do. Interestingly, we are a research institute and we are government funded, but actually only 1/3 of our budget is coming from the federal and the state government. And 2/3 of our budget are actually coming from the industry or publicly financed projects, EU projects, German projects, things like that. At our institute, as I said, we are located in Berlin. We have 7 different departments within the institute. And the one that I'm working for, Future Applications and Media, we mainly deal with topics like media streaming, 5G, deep media, AI, ML, extended reality, AR, VR, but also things like HBBTV, for those who know that, and standardization, more or less. So we are also trying to contribute actively to standardization and then take what's coming out of standardization and build first prototypes on that. And ideally, this is done in an open source manner so that we produce some code and that we open source that and make it available to people and then provide support, feedback, and maybe also some extensions to these projects.
Has that always been the plan or strategy for Fraunhofer Focus to publish what you develop in your research as open source?
Not always. So as I said, we are building prototypes also for the industry. So it depends a bit what's the scope of the project. One thing I also need to highlight, and people will potentially also come back to this later, is that since we have 75 Fraunhofer institutes, it's always a bit of a consideration that we need to take into account when it comes to royalties, to patents, and to different open source licenses. So I guess especially also big companies know how to deal with that. We also need to deal with that, and we have obviously also some lawyers who look into that. But aside from that, we are contributing to open source. And from my point of view, this is really a great working model because you're giving something back to the community. And oftentimes, open source software is a foundation for a commercial product or even for the research community to build new stuff on top of that. Maybe I can provide also some concrete examples of open source software that we are dealing with. So on one hand,
please do.
There's Dash.js, which we probably will talk about more today. Dash.js is an open source Dash player. It's a software that was developed more or less by the industry forum, a Dash industry forum. And it's also, and this is important, it's backed by the Dash industry forum. So we have some funding from Dash.if in order to do development and maintenance of this player. And this is probably a position that not a lot of open source projects are in. They're always looking for contributions, for monetization. And as we have Dash.if backing this project, this is really great to see, since it's a foundation for a lot of different other projects. Aside from Dash.js, I mentioned the 5G Mac reference tools before, where we also deal with media streaming, with 5G broadcast. This is backed again by the 5G Media Action Group. So kind of similar model to what we are doing in Dash.js, with really the goal to kind of take the standards, take the specifications, and verify them with some concrete implementations. So checking what is in the spec, is there something missing? Can this be implemented as it was intended to? And this is, from my understanding and from my point of view, really a great working model to have on one hand the specifications, the editors of the specification. Then on the other hand, you have people implementing these new specifications, and they can exchange information. So I, as a developer, can talk to the specification editors, provide feedback, and on the other hand, I can always reach out to them, ask questions if something is not clear or if I think there's information missing.
How did you get involved into, you touched a little bit on that on the introduction, but how did you get involved in the Dash Industry Forum from the start?
Yeah, so as I said, I started really as a student assistant already dealing with Dash.js. So I implemented some concrete functionality for ad insertion, namely Xlink and event handling. And this was really my, start, where I got in contact with the Dash Industry Forum with people like Thomas Stockhammer, Will Law, Alex Gilardi, Ali Begin. And from there on, it kind of moved forward. So we attended Dash.if face-to-face meetings. We are trying to connect also in the calls and provide some feedback to the people attending the calls, trying to also discuss with them upcoming features, some new aspects of the specifications and interop points. So that's more or less how I started. And from there on, I was always interested in Dash.js development. But obviously, and I think you guys also know that, we have a full-time job and you want to do some programming yourself at the weekend. Sometimes you're motivated, sometimes you're not that motivated. It's always a trade-off. But I really try to also spend some free time of myself, spending some time on actually doing some programming work, especially if you are not really programming during the week because you have calls to attend, conferences to attend. So that's really, I think, also a good working model for open source software.
Yeah. I mean, Dash.js, that's, it's more than just a reference player or an example, right? So what do you, Do you know how much is it used in outside in the world?
That's a really good point. I see like three main usage areas for Dash.js. So on one hand, as you said, it's a reference client. We are adding new aspects to the Dash.f interop points, to the ISO specification, and then we take Dash.js in order to validate these new features. At the same time, Dash.js is not only used by the Dash industry forum. So it's a foundation, for instance, for DVB reference software, for CTA reference software, for HBBTV reference software. So it's used by other organizations as well as some kind of reference client. Second thing is we see companies using Dash.js in production. There's the BBC, the iPlayer that uses Dash.js as a foundation. There's the Deutsche Telekom using it in their Magenta TV product. And there are many more. I think Orange is also using it in production. Arte, the broadcaster, French broadcaster, also using Dash.js. And probably a lot of other companies that we are not really aware of because we are not tracking, obviously, who is using our software. But it's really the foundation for commercial applications, commercial products, and this is really nice to see. And I mean, ideally, also these companies contribute back to the player in some way. This doesn't mean need that, to be like a direct contribution source code, but they can also sponsor certain new features that might not be that interesting for Dash.f, for instance, but might be interesting for them. And maybe to give you a concrete example, some months ago, we had a project together with Arte, the French broadcaster, and they were sponsoring WebBTT implementation in Dash.js to work on HBTV devices. This was something that was not working before. It's working now, but they cannot really take this back to Dash.af and tell them this has high priority now, because for them, it's not too important that the player runs on HBTV. So we had a small project with Arte together. We implemented this feature in Dash.js. We merged this back to the main code base. And now it's available for everyone. And I think this is also something that is really beneficial for open source software, that you have industry companies ideally backing this up. And I think what's the main advantage of Dash.js is that it's really visible to companies that they are using this library, this open source software, as part of their product. If you think about like maybe specific JavaScript libraries, Core.js, for instance, maybe a lot of companies are not even aware that this is like a fundamental piece of their software, and they will never back the development here because this is not visible more or less to the outside. While for the media streaming player, this is a key component and it's really visible. And if something is not working, then the video is not showing, right? Or the subtitles are not showing up. And then it becomes obvious.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case with many open source projects, is to say, you know about a few. Some interact with you, some give comments, some test, and some even contribute directly. But there also is, I think there is, that's usually just the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many more out there using it in silence and you don't even know about. And I know a few that you haven't mentioned that I know is using Dash.js. So I think it's quite widespread when it comes to MPEG Dash playback, I would say. How does it feel to be contributing to such a project that you know is quite heavily used, even in HBBTV devices?
Yeah, that's quite a good feeling, I have to say, because it's really something that is visible. So you make a visible change, and you also talk to people, and you're happy to hear that they're using the player, as I said, also in production. Really good feeling, and I think it's not... You cannot take it for granted that you really see the outcome of your work in such a way, and it's really visible. So that's really good. And maybe something I didn't mention before, Dash.js is also important for the research community. So we had like a Twitch challenge in 2019 as part of the MMSys conference, where people were asked to implement new low latency throughput algorithms, because this is a big problem. Theme of low latency streaming, you cannot really estimate the throughput if you use chunk transfer encoding. So that's something that was also very nice to see, that they use Dash.js as more or less foundation for the challenge. And then we had like three winner algorithms, and they all have been contributed back to the player. So we had this challenge, we had the outcome, and this was then more or less ported back to the player, and the whole community benefits from that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect of open source, as Wolof in our last episode mentioned, the collaboration part, which I think is a really strong thing, that you you may, when you talk about when you think about open source, initially you think about it's for free and all those things, but the true power lies a lot in the collaboration, and as you see, I mean, these things, the technology advances that's been done there and the new algorithms that they are contributing back. So I think the more people contributing, the better it becomes, and I think that's sort of the true benefit of it, I would say. So if we stay there a little bit around standardization, Magnus, you've been also involved in a lot of standardization work. What would your thoughts be on that part? How much does open source contribute to the standardization work, would you say?
Where did you direct that question?
Sorry, to you, Magnus.
Okay. No, but I think it's a lot of open source contributions helping out in standardization. It goes hand in hand in many places, actually. And I think Dash.js and Dash.if is a very good example, but I see more and more of that because that's a good way of getting your standards used in the market, and it's also a good way of verifying your standards. So I see definitely they go very much hand in hand when it comes to standardization.
Yeah, I agree on this, Jonas. I mentioned Dash.js before, but it's really also important for the 5G Mac reference tools that we are maintaining as well. Because, I mean, for Dash, you usually take one specification and there's everything in there. For 5G, it's really complicated. You have tons of specifications. You need to collect the right pieces out of the specifications. And the working model we have established there is that we actually have like a call every month with the experts from the different working groups, and that we can directly contribute like feedback to them, align with them, and they take that back to the standardization organization. And then ideally our requests, our change requests, make it to the standard in one of the next releases. So we have this feedback loop that Magnus also just mentioned, feedback from developers back to the editors and from the editors to developers. And I think that's a perfect working model.
And it's also a very transparent model. Everyone around who may not be participating directly may at least see what's happening and in which direction things are moving. Tell us a little bit more about what is 5G Mag.
Yeah, so 5G Mag is short for 5G Media Action Group. It's a similar model that Dash.if is following. So you have multiple companies from different areas coming together, and then you divide your work into different working groups. Some are doing standardization, some are looking into new use cases, and some are actually doing the development, obviously together with the people writing the specifications. And this is more or less what we are doing, or I'm focusing on. So we have a reference tool set up in place with various components for 5G media streaming and 5G broadcast. I don't think we need to go too much into detail. But all of these different components cover aspects of the 3GPP specifications. And we are trying to really establish like a foundation that not only companies can come and take this as a foundation for their commercial product, but that we also see that what is in the specification is really working. And I don't think, at least to my knowledge, there's a similar project yet that deals with these specific topics, 5G media streaming, 5G broadcast. So it's really great to see that we are picking this up, that we are trying to prove that it's really working, because also sometimes people don't think it's really working much in the spec, so you need some kind of reference implementation, and that we ideally also connect to other open source projects. So I said 5G can be a beast. You have different also parts of the 5G specification. You have the core part, you have the RAN part, then you have the more or less the consumer, the UE part. And so we are more on the UE side, but there's also parts of the core side that we are implementing, and we are reusing existing open source software. For those who are interested in 5G, they might know SS-RAN or 5GS. So we are also trying to connect with the maintainers of these projects to align our activities. And ideally, you can later on put the pieces together. So you have the core network, you have a radio access network, you have the UE side, and you just plug in everything. And because of the standardized interfaces, everything works as expected. So that's the overall goal, more or less.
And the use cases for 5G in media that you're working with mainly, what would that be, would you say? Mm-hmm.
I would say that we are really aiming for combining broadcast and unicast technology. So maybe as an easy example, in an ideal world, when everyone is looking, watching the same, I can broadcast my content to everyone. So that would be like the starting point, more or less. And then we want to enhance the broadcast streaming or broadcast session with unicast aspect. So for instance, time-shifted viewing. So for those who are not watching at live edge, you might want to seek back a bit. Then we would deliver something via unicast. Or you want to exchange the broadcast advertisement with unicast personalized advertisements. Then you would also fall back to, I want to say, classic unicast streaming via CDN. But on top of the 5G media streaming architecture. And at the same time, when you move back to the main content, like everyone else is watching, then you would receive again everything via broadcast. There are multiple additional use cases, such as additional subtitles delivered via unicast, additional audio languages, things like that. So you're really trying to combine more or less the best of two worlds, receiving the main content via broadcast, but always the opportunity to fall back also to unicast. And from a content provider perspective, there could also be something like consumption reporting involved. So a client is reporting that it's watching the unicast right now. And maybe at some point, if you have too many clients connecting via unicast, you turn on your broadcast dynamically, and then everyone switches to broadcast. So it's really a trade-off also for the content provider when to provision everything via broadcast and in addition via unicast. And when maybe only a few people are watching, then you only limit the delivery to unicast.
Magnus, what's your view on that? You talk a lot with technical directors and on the broadcasting and streaming side. Are they starting thinking in this area yet, or is this a bit early?
I would say 5G has been talked about for quite some time, and multicast distribution in the 5G network is definitely in there, especially when we. It's a lot of focus on sports at the moment when it comes to streaming, because that live and sports has been the topic of the year, I would say, when it comes to a lot of sporting our rights are moving into streaming, and also in stadium experiences and 5G networks and these type of things. It goes hand in hand, so absolutely, and I think the progress is great at the moment, and I would definitely see more of 5G coming into the streaming world, definitely. And also reach, because when you see more and more subscribers are cord cutting and then going into streaming, and in a lot of areas, 5G might be the best coverage they have when it comes. We're quite spoiled in the Nordic. We have fiber to the homes basically all over. But in other areas, 5G is the way to get to real good bandwidth in streaming.
Yeah, now we talked a lot about using open source in standardization work here. Would there be any... And this is a question to you, Daniel. What's your thoughts and view here? Would there be any situation where open source would not be a good thing for, as part of a standardization work?
That's a tough question. And I really can think only about this patent and royalty problem that might arise. So you have the specifications and you want to do a reference implementation, but you're not sure if you have any patents in this direction that you're kind of giving away when you open source your code. And I think the bigger the company, the bigger the problem. So if it's a small company, you are aware of what patents your company has. But speaking, for instance, about Fraunhofer with these 75 institutes that count as one more or less loyal entity, how do you say, one entity, then we would need to check, like, are there any patents from any of the Fraunhofers that we are giving away at this point? And this can be really a hard process for us to check this sophisticated manner.
Yeah, Magnus, if you can remind me, I mean, the latest developments in codec development of course the codec toolbox and the specification that's open, but the actual implementations, has it been reference implementations as part of the standardization work in AV1, for example, do you recall?
Definitely we have AV1 reference implementations out there that are used quite frequently. And then coming back to what you discussed, merging together the patent part with open source and standardization, I was at an EBU event a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about reach of software, and the absolutely biggest reach of a software development part is when it's standard, when it's open source, and it's very clear. It doesn't have to be for free, but it's clear licensing terms. it's very obvious how much you will pay and what you will pay for. I think the borderline is where you get into these patents and licenses that are so unclear, so you don't even know if you're sort of what you will pay in the end. But yeah, the graph that I saw when it comes to software penetration was open source, standard, and clear licensing terms. Then you have your success story.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I can see there might be a problem or an issue when, let's say, you develop a codec standard. There are a lot of research, there are a lot of money invested into that work. You sort of do that as you think in the future you will earn money from the royalties, from the patents. And then you build someone, or you build as part of the standardization work, build a reference implementation, which is open source. But in that reference implementation, you actually have a patent infringement that someone, maybe not you, but someone else have issued that's unaware. So I do appreciate the complexity in that area. And then, of course, the bigger question, which is, I don't think we have the time for to discuss that today, but I mean, of course, software patents to be or not to be, that's another question. But when we have that, there are some things that needs to be considered when doing this work. Of course, the higher, the more difficult problems or sharper algorithms, or what to call it, the more maybe you have invested in it to develop it as well. So yeah, there's no silver bullet here, I think. But as you say, Magnus, I agree. I think that for software penetration and as reach, definitely open source is helpful. So I guess it depends on what you also are after. Right. Daniel, if you would be tired about Dash.js and no longer want to develop it or do stuff in it, what will happen with it?
Yeah, that will not happen, at least soon.
That's good. Good to hear for all listeners that are using it.
I think so Dash.js is really community driven. I mean, I'm doing some implementation, but there's also different contributors like opening pull requests back to the player. So Orange did a lot of stuff, Bertrand, for instance, and other companies as well, BBC is picking up some things. So this is really good to see, and I don't think Dash.js would die if I would leave. There will always be someone who can do the maintenance. And it really, a lot of my work is also to review pull requests from other people, just make sure that nothing breaks. And it's not only me doing the work, but really a lot of different people contributing.
That sounds good to hear. And also, I mean, you mentioned it before in this podcast that there is someone backing this project. So it's not just a passion project by you. It's Dash.if behind it. And they are a part of many companies. So that has interest in that it should live. So I'm quite confident that it will not die. The minute you want to do something else, and that's good. And I think that's something we talked about in this podcast before. I mean, we need to find sort of a sustainable model for open source as well. It cannot only be dependent on one's passion and interest for it to live. We cannot build an internet on top of that. Before we conclude with the final point on this podcast, Magnus, can you share with our viewers a little bit on what has happened in the streaming industry more in general?
Absolutely. I think a lot of things are building up because of NAB coming up. So there is a lot of pending press releases and pending product releases and teasers sent out now. But I would say that what I said before is that one big theme at the moment is live and linear. Again, it's not only on demand at the moment. I would say fast is one hype that I think it is of the linear TV viewing, but also live sports, live events. Netflix is doing live, as we mentioned the last time. So live and linear is definitely having a revival when it comes to both fast and other type of events. And a lot of sports rights is up for negotiations. And I just read an article now with Viacom 18 that had their first cricket game in India after taking over from Disney, and they had 16 million viewers on streaming. So it's definitely taking off when it comes to live big events on streaming as well. And coming back to the cost savings, I think that is probably the most discussed topics I have when I'm traveling around now talking to people, is that how can you make the streaming platforms more cost efficient, and how can you deliver using OTT and streaming in a more cost efficient way, because there are no free lunches. YouTube TV just raised their prices because of the, it costs a certain amount to acquire the content rights, and the streaming is not the silver bullet that will make everything just voila go away and the costs are going away. So cost savings and making things more efficient, and the latest maybe is how you can use machine learning and AI to make things more a little bit more efficient and open and cost efficient. But so that is definitely the themes, and I think we'll see more of that at the NAB now when it comes to how can you make things more cost efficient, how can you make more things more productive, and so, but definitely live linear is coming back into the discussions more and more.
Daniel, will you be going to NAB this year?
Not this year. Actually attending the Mile High conference, which is I think 2 or 3 weeks later, and I don't want to travel back and forth between the US and Europe all the time. So yeah, I'm skipping NAB, but my colleagues will be there and attend Mile High Video.
That's nice. All right, Daniel. What open source project would you recommend our listeners? It doesn't have to be streaming related, but it can be.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm using a lot of open source streaming products and projects. So this is where my main recommendations come from. I'm actually want to start with something that's coming from you guys, because Torbjörn from Ivan is developing the live simulator, and that's really an important tool for me. As part of Dash.js development. So that's a tool that you can use to create live streams out of a VOD content. And the great thing about it is that you have lots of options to manipulate the MPD, manipulate even the segments, include specific boxes in these segments. So that's really beneficial for Dash.js development. And lots of the streams that are coming from this tool are integrated into our functional test suite. So more or less automatic testing with these streams from the live stream to make sure that we don't have any regression. Maybe another tool that I'm also using quite frequently, at least since a few weeks and months, Bitmoven open source the tool called MP4 Inspector. So that's a Chrome plugin that you can more or less plug in directly into the Chrome developer tools, and it allows you to check the ISO BMFF boxes directly in the browser. So I was using a different tool before when I wanted to look into the content of the boxes. But with this tool, you really start a stream and then you have it integrated in your developer tools, and you can immediately click through the boxes and check some timestamps that might be important to debug.
Oh, that's cool. So you actually go into sort of the developer console and then you right click on the segment and you can do it. Okay, that's cool.
Correct, yeah. It looks a bit like the network panel in the developer tools, and then you see all the segments and you can just click on the segment and it will list you the box structure. So that's really... Nice.
I didn't know about that. Good tip. I will use it.
Nice. Yeah, and maybe another tool not related to media streaming, maybe a bit of a niche product, but I'm using a tool called Rectangle on my Mac, which allows you to arrange your windows in a way that you wanted. So you just type a keyboard shortcut and then it goes to the left or to the right or maximizes full screen. So that's also used actually by my colleagues, everyone who has a Mac more or less. So that's really also a good tool. Yeah. And apart from that, I guess everyone in the show previously mentioned FFmpeg as kind of a Swiss Army knife for media streaming and encoding, decoding. And VLC, obviously, also nice to do some reference or comparison.
Yeah, of course, it would be great to have one from Videolan or FFmpeg as joining the podcast later on. So if you're listening, just contact us and we will probably have you on our show. But we'll see. There are a lot of others that we will talk to as well. All right, Magnus, do you have any final words before we thank Daniel?
No, I think it's been an interesting discussion, and I think it's a great combination with standardization and open source that I think Daniel is definitely contributing in. So it's been a good discussion.
Jonas, maybe some final words from my side, because we actually have a Dash.js face-to-face meeting in June. So I would like to more or less invite everyone, every listener here, to join us if you're interested in Dash.js development. We'll be an on-site meeting in Berlin, part of the Media Web Symposium that we are hosting here at Fraunhofer Focus. that's more or less like 1 week filled with media streaming topics. And as I said, Dash.js face-to-face is one of them. So in case you're developing Dash.js features, interested in Dash.js development, attendance is free. So I think we can put the link in the notes maybe for people to check out. And happy to see you in Berlin.
Yeah, sounds great. Now you need to make sure the venue is big enough. So many listeners. Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. Just send me the link and I will put it in show notes.
Perfect.
All right. Again, much thank you, Daniel, for joining us this episode. And looking forward to see where Dash.js and everything around that is moving. And also this 5G Mac output will be interesting to follow. See what's coming out of that and how it can change the way we both produce, distribute and consume video and audio, of course. Magnus, thank you. I hope you good luck, you and your team.
Thank you.
Today.
I'll do my part from the stands.
You do your part from the stands. That's good. Someone has to do that. And with that, thank you also the listeners who is listening and following our podcast. Very happy if you want to share or comment or whatever you want to do. And if you are a user of Dash.js that hasn't been mentioned in this podcast and you want to want everyone else to know that, just let us know and we will share that. I'm on Twitter as Jonas Birme and Magnus as Svensson 00. I don't know, Daniel, do you have a Twitter?
Yeah, it's Diesel Harvey, but yeah, my last name is not that easy, so I hope people write that correctly.
Daniel Harvey, Diesel Harvey, and then we can have a chat on there offline. So thank you all again. Thank you very much, everyone, participating and listening, and we'll be back soon. Have a good day.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Ni har lyssnat på Streaming Podden. En podcast för dig som är intresserad av streamingteknik och nyheter i området. Programmet produceras av iVim Technology, leverantörsoberoende specialister inom videoteknik och mediedistribution.